last I See the Light Gar, we need to do a Disney-themed podcast on Disney's 50th animated feature. Hello there, and welcome to Magic by Design. Our lives are beginning this week as we review Disney's Tangled, first released in 2010. My name is Ken, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, last brother, Garrett. Gar, how are you?
There was a lot of Tangled puns in that intro, Ken.
I did, yeah, I went for it.
And you managed to do it mostly without getting tongue-tangled.
Yeah, just the once, but you won't hear that.
I'm sniffly today.
You're a bit sniffly?
Yeah.
You got the COVIDs?
Yes, which is the reason I'm talking across to you, face-to-face without a mask.
Well, you know, we live in the same house, so if I got it, you got it. If you got it, I got it.
And realistically, if I got it, I probably got it from you. So...
Well, then.
Yeah.
It's not as if you're going nowhere, Gary. You could get it in the supermarket or the grocery store, as they say across the pond.
How dare you say words like grocery store on this here podcast, sullying the good nature of the Irish version of the English language.
Tangled, Gar.
It's a good film. I like it a lot.
Yeah. It's only my second time watching Tangled, I think.
Yeah, same, because we saw it in the cinema, of course, together back in the day.
I remember us being very skeptical about it, as in, like, we didn't have much confidence in the Disney brand at the time. And then we saw it and we were like, this is good.
Because what?
This is real good.
2010, right?
Yeah.
When in 2010?
Around about...
As I look, November. So yeah. I would have been 18, you would have been 21. So we would have been in our cynical old, like, I don't watch Disney films, I'm mature, I watch Schindler's List. As opposed to when we watch this, it's like, oh, this is full of joy and happiness. Why would we not love this? Because it's like, Rapunzel film? Ugh, ew, that's for girls. That's probably me when I'm 18, I'm sure. And then we went and saw it, and it's like, this is an utter delight. What an utter delight this is.
This was a firm sign that Disney were back firing on all cylinders.
Because I think this is a decent step up from Princess and the Frog. Because I think Princess and the Frog, it feels nostalgic, but has some problems in its own right. I don't think the love, as we discussed in depth last week, I don't think the love arc particularly worked by itself, and the songs were good, not great. As opposed to this, in which I think the love arc works much better, and the songs are great. Like, just flat out great.
My test of the songs is, could you put this on the stage as a musical tomorrow? And you could. And it has been, only on Cruise Lines, though, we'll talk about that later. But Princess and the Frog is similar, but this is, like, made to be a musical. You could literally translate this to the stage with no issues.
Yeah, my test is, do I remember the songs after the film?
Yeah.
In which, like, Princess and the Frog, I think the only example is almost there.
That has been in my head all week.
Yeah, and I actually think it's more because of Nicole's version on the podcast last week than the actual film.
She did a really nice version, didn't she? Fair play. Nicole, you're great.
If you don't listen to all the way through to the end of the podcast to hear the songs, we've always said this, what are you doing? Why are you suffering us and then not listening to the nice song at the end?
That's the treat you get for listening to us.
For suffering through my rambling and nonsense. As opposed to this where it's like, See the Light and When Will I Begin are just absolute bangers. And even, what's the name of that song? Mummy's Right or whatever it's called.
Mama Knows Best.
Mama Knows Best. There we go. Also, a good villain song.
Sorry, Mother Knows Best. Same thing.
Yeah, whatever.
There's even the Gaston type song in the pub, which I like as well.
So yeah, so this film is just, it's again, like if Princess and the Frog was the sign of the comeback, which we've already discussed, it's not really, because if you look at Meet the Robinsons and Bolt, there are plenty of seeds for that comeback there. But Princess and the Frog is going back to formula, and we talked about this all the way back in, like, you know, the Tarzan and Hunchback and all these episodes, where it's like, they, like Tarzan in particular was the one where they churned out their formula, but their formula is damn good, so it's very enjoyable. And that's what they just went back to with Princess and the Frog and this. Like, there are varying degrees of quality of their formula, but their formula will pretty much never fail to deliver because it's good songs, a decent story, lovely animation, and some child-friendly gags. And you really can't go wrong with that unless you're a heartless, soulless monster, which I am, and you still can't go wrong with that, so...
Yeah, this film makes me happy. I remember when we reviewed Lilo and Stitch, I remember saying afterwards, hook it to my veins, as in, like, it gave me a nice, glowy, happy feeling. This film is similar.
Yeah, it's just a good movie. It's just a good, enjoyable, pretty 3D animated movie. Far and away the prettiest, even if, again, still interior shots are... They just don't have the lighting down. It's just the lighting.
That's why most of this film is outside.
Yeah, but, like, there's some stuff, especially in the period toward the, like, middle of the film and end of the film, when, you know, when Rapunzel goes missing and the mother finds out that she's gone missing and there's, like, this all this lightning effects and they take all the sun and stuff out. And they don't really know how to animate that without it looking kind of gross.
Yeah.
So they'll get there, but otherwise this is an immensely pretty looking film. All the outside and exterior shots and the lantern shots and the city shots and the forests and wood shots, lovely, gorgeous, brilliant to look at. The best water, I think, in a film I've seen in a very long time.
I was about
time.
To say, there's some real, we'll talk about it in the animation section, but there's some real step forwards in the rendering of, you know, natural elements like water, and especially hair. There's a lot of work went into the hair as well, of course, because it's Rapunzel.
And there's like wet hair in this film. It's like, oh, look at their wet hair. That's combining the water and hair knowledge they have into one.
But even the fluidity of the animation and the facial expressions and the movements, everything is coming into sync. They're really getting, like, and we'll talk about it again in the animation section, but they're really getting a firm grip on transposing those principles that succeeded in 2D into 3D.
Yeah, they've done it. They're back. Disney are back. Well done, John Lasseter. Did he have anything to do with this film?
He was always a producer of these films at the time.
Yeah, he's not listed as produced by. It's produced by Roy Conley, apparently. So there you go.
Tangled was in development at Disney for 6 years, having first been originated by veteran Disney animator Glenn Keane as far back as 1996. Keane pitched the idea to Michael Eisner in 2001, who greenlit the project on the condition that it be made in computer animation.
Why? You can't do Rapunzel in 2D? Her hair is just too much.
I think they were just interested in furthering the technology and they wanted to...
Though, honestly, I would actually understand if they're like, listen, our 2D animators are very good and the best in the world, but they will go nuts trying to animate this goddamn long hair for the entire of a 2D animated film. So you can do it, but we're doing it in 3D.
Keane was hesitant because he doubted the fluidity of the medium at the time compared to traditional animation. But as you said, I think it would have been very hard to do the hair in 2D.
No, it couldn't have been as long, I don't think. And the, like all the effects they do with the hair and like a lot of the action scenes which are based around the hair, which is quite cool.
I love that she uses her hair for different things.
Yeah.
Subduing Flynn or like grabbing things.
Tying him to a chair, which is very good.
Swinging off things.
And... Yeah, like the mid-scene action film with the water and the crumbling and them being chased and all that, where she's like swinging across gorges with hair. It's very good.
Keane struggled to make the story work, resulting in the film being delayed. Eventually, Keane and his co-director stepped down from the film due to other commitments. Keane said later that it was because he had a heart attack.
Oh, well, that's certainly a different commitment.
To be replaced by Byron Howard and Nathan Greno, who we know from a lot of other films. They worked on a lot of the 2000s films. There's an interesting note here, Gar. Princess and the Frog didn't perform as well as expected, so it was determined by the studio executives that part of the reason was the inclusion of the word princess in the title, which alienated a wider audience. So the name of the movie was initially Rapunzel, but changed to Tangled to make it more gender neutral. That's also likely why the film was a two-hander with an appealing male and female lead featuring prominently.
But, like, Princess and the Frog had a male lead as well. It's not like, what's his name, who's... I don't even remember Prince's name from Princess and the Frog. It's not like he was like a side character. He was there for the entire film. He was the central figure to the film. And obviously it's a princess film. It's about Tiana more than it's about him. But he's still like on screen for the entire film.
Yeah. Well, I do think Flynn Rider has a more active role in the film though.
Yeah. I by the fact that I don't remember the name of the prince, Princess and the Frog tells you.
Prince Naveen Garr.
Tells you everything about the degree to which that character landed on me. And I think he is the weakest part of that film, so maybe they are right to be like, not that we need to have more of a male role, because as I said, Prince Naveen is all over that film. It's not like he's, you know, only there for 5 minutes of it. It's just, I don't think he's a particularly interesting character in his own right, and they just made a better character.
For sure. Production costs are estimated at a whopping $260 million. If true, it's the most expensive animated film ever made, and one of the most expensive movies ever made, period. This is interesting, Gar, because even as far back as Fox and the Hound, which we can see is a bit of a precursor to the Disney Renaissance, they started spending the money again.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the money is the be-all and end-all, but sometimes when you put resources into things, God forbid they work.
Yeah, and like when you look at the animation of this film, you see where it went at least.
Yeah.
Like, of that, probably 260 million, like probably 160 of it was just the water, just to make that look good.
And the hair. Tangled grossed 592 million at the box office, the studio's biggest hit financially for some time. Now, there was a lot of money went out, but if you take the estimated promotion of the film, that's still a profit of 200 million.
Yeah, plus, you know, all the streaming that comes with it now.
Yeah.
It's weird to be like, you know, this film made 292 million, but like Disney Plus does weirdly, like obviously there's a long-term value on home video, there's a long-term value in toys, there's a long-term value in video games, there's a long-term value in Tangled being a world in Kingdom Hearts 3, which it's been a very long time since we've had Kingdom Hearts mentions on the show, Ken, because we've been in an era of films where Kingdom Hearts didn't care. Kingdom Hearts isn't like, let's do a Bolt world.
Not much representation there,
Meet the Robinson. Simpsons or Atlantis or Treasure Planet. None of those films get representation. There's nothing in Home of the Range, Ken. Lilo and Stitch does get a bunch, at least. Whereas we're back, Ken, Tangled gets a whole world in Kingdom Hearts 3, and it's not a very good one because it's quite boring looking.
That's an interesting point, though, because I think a barometer of success for Disney these days is, do these things become a franchise that spawn, as you said, TV, sequels, theme park rides? They value it, you know, as an overall franchise.
It's a property. It's not just a film.
Yeah.
And if you look at the freaking Disney Plus, when we typed in Tangled, there's like four other Tangled things. There's like a sequel film. There's shorts. There's a television show. So it's like they've got their mileage out of Tangled. Flynn Rider is still all over the place.
Gar, we mentioned there that the animation is absolutely beautiful in this film. The film further employed the unique artistic style of blending together features of computer-generated imagery with traditional animation while using non-photorealistic rendering to create an impression of a painting first seen in Bolt, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. They're really starting to come to terms with that because, especially as you noted, the village or the city itself or the kingdom, you do get a sense that that has a painterly style, but it just blends so well with the rest of the surroundings.
Yeah, and it has that like magical Gawain, a fairy tale thing without being realistic or jarring or bad or, you know, Aristocast level like melting. It's been a while since I've buried Aristocats on the show as well.
Of course,
slip it in there.
It's a tradition.
Yeah.
The Rococo paintings of French artist Jean-Honoré Fragonard, particularly The Swing, you've seen it, it's very famous, were used as references for the film's artistic style. They were looking for a romantic and lush feeling, which I really did get from this film.
Yeah, and it works for the core story as well, which is, for the most part, it's back to a classic Disney love story. There's like growth, and Rapunzel has all her stuff going on, but it's really a love story between Rapunzel and Flynn.
And, you know, I think it's a complex love story. It's not as straightforward as other ones.
I was about to say it's been a while since we had a love story, but it's been a while since we have a good one, is what I'm going to say.
The final look of the film is a compromise between what the artists want and what the executives wanted. So the executives were pushing the 3D because it's probably cheaper at this stage and quicker. Filmmakers were going for a film that was computer animated, but an extension of the traditional 2D Disney aesthetic. They wanted to bring the warmth and intuitive style of hand-drawn to CG. And I think this has been the most successful application of that to date.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't really notice it, so that's probably a plus point.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you go back to Chicken Little, you can see them trying to figure it out. You can see that it's a bit creaky and a bit wrong, for want of a better term. All the movement here, all the environment are just really in harmony with each other.
And like, this film has two all-time great, top-tier cute animal sidekicks.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, top notch. Like, Pascal the chameleon and Maximus the horse are just absolutely top notch. Like, I don't think there's... They're both in the same film, and I don't think there's better cute animal sidekicks than them in any other Disney film. Maybe there's some to come we'll talk about. What's the name of the thing from Moana?
Pooha?
Yeah.
And I can't remember. No, Pooha doesn't really come, though. Pooha stays on the island.
Which is a travesty.
The name of the chicken, I can't remember.
Chicken is bad. But yeah, like Pascal and Maximus, and they're both so well animated. Like, they have all those expressions and character. Like, Pascal in particular, with all of his sassy looks
and giving people his faces. Little laugh. But I was going to say this, I had it in the story notes, but Pascal actually drives a lot of the comedy because his expressions punctuate the jokes.
Yeah, he just jims the camera all the time. It's great. And Maximus is, like, great. What a great character.
And, like, he's a better version of the horse from Home on the Range.
Mm.
But like, as you said, Gar, you know they've got it down when they can actually employ techniques that you would use in live action filmmaking with animation, you know, facial expressions, those kind of cutaways and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's great. It's just great. They look like, what a nice looking film.
Existing technology continued to present difficulties, in particular animating hair turned out to be a challenge. We know that. Senior software engineer Kelly Ward spent 6 years writing programs to make it move in the way that they wanted.
Mm.
An improved version of hair simulation program Dynamic Wires, originally developed for Bolt, was eventually used to make hair float believably in water and to surmount other similar challenges, like, as we said, swinging on hair, using it as a weapon, using it as a method of tying Flynn Rider to the chair.
Yeah.
Discrete differential geometry was used to produce the desired effects, freeing the animators from executing these specific tasks directly, which would have taken days instead of minutes. So basically the technology got to the point where they could say, oh, I wanted to do this, and the program did it, rather than them having to animate it.
It's so really what we're watching is math rather than animation.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful math. We talked about this, Gar. Water is also extremely well rendered in this film. This had previously been a challenge in both 2D and 3D animation, dating all the way back to Pinocchio.
Yeah. But actually, like, realistically, their water always looked good, though.
Yeah, but it's the movement of water and how water interacts with characters and the elements.
Because it's a free flow. Anything I think that's a free flowing like object is something that like does not have controlled movement. You know, like when I move my hand up and down, they struggle enough with that through the years of moving body parts. But that's a controlled movement. You know, it moves the same every time. I can't move it beyond the joint. It's a thing that has like a controlled range of movement, as opposed to the water, where if you're trying to animate water, water is chaos. You know. If you unleash a torrent of water into a space, the way it moves and like fills that space is chaos. It'll overflow, it'll bounce off this, it'll move over here, and while it'll move in the same direction, it'll move all over the place in that direction in any which way possible. Same with hair, you know, when you're standing in the wind, like even going back to Pocahontas, where she's standing and gracefully looking over a cliff as her wind blows and her hair blows in the wind, her wind that doesn't blow in the hair, but she has wind in that film, I guess. Magic wind that teaches her languages. But as her hair blows in the wind, but her, even then, you, if you watch the way her hair moves, it's very much a, we're looping a pattern here, and her hair just moves around and around. So like to actually implement these, like as I said, chaotic elements, like hair is a thing that is uncontrollable. Whatever you do, if I flick my head, it'll move in a way that I don't anticipate or control or even see. So to the idea of animating that, animating it coherently, and animating in a way that feels organic is such a huge, probably impossible challenge, like to really do it accurately. But they sure try their damnedest.
So it's interesting that you're using maths to replicate chaos.
Yes.
Very interesting stuff.
Maths is chaos, though. Everyone knows that.
As a consequence, Gar, the in-escape sequence is really thrilling and very well animated. It's one of my favourite parts of the film.
Yeah, and like I do like the contrivedness somewhat of the, like, we've knocked the rock over and the rock has suddenly fallen to cover just the whole of this cave we went into. But all that, it's animation. It's a freaking children's film. Who cares?
We need to move things along here. Gar, we've touched on the story. Let's move into it a bit more here. The Grimm brothers are back again this week, yeah. Because Tangled is based on their seminal fairy tale.
What was the last Grimm film we had?
Actually, just last week.
Oh, yeah. But that's half of the Grimm film, though, because it was actually, well, to be fair, the Princess Frog was an adaptation of Grimm in the first place as well, wasn't it?
But yeah, but it was mostly based on her version, so.
Yeah, so, like, before that, Little Mermaid was Hans Christian Andersen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sleeping Beauty, was that Grimm?
I'm not sure. I think so.
Yeah. Surely we don't have to go all the way back to Sleeping Beauty, though.
No, I don't think so, but, you know, research. Disney is really getting a handle on integrating comedy into the writing of these movies. A lot of funny dialogue and bits in this movie here.
Yeah. It's particularly, well, actually, though, there's one really bad one where it's like there's the scene in the pub where everyone puts their knives up to Flynn Rider.
Yeah, and that's become a big meme, yeah.
An exceedingly obnoxious meme where everyone's like, what's your Disney Tangled opinion that will have everybody having you like this with the knives to the thing? It's like, shut up. Shut up with your memes.
But I think as we touched on, the fact that they've got the expressionism down really helps with the gags.
Yeah. Well, like, they've had this for a while, though, because if you go back to The Lion King, the thing we focused on The Lion King as well there was that all these expressions. But that was 2D, and this is the first time I think they've nailed that in 3D.
Yeah, but I do think they're just getting better at writing comedy. They're getting to a good sweet spot of writing for kids, but also for adults. And, you know, as I go through what I call the new Renaissance period, I think Disney started making movies that children could comfortably enjoy, but adults won't tear their hair out watching. They'll actually actively engage with it and even enjoy it.
Yeah.
And we are the audience for that film anyway. We're dragging our kids to it.
People are always like, you should make the films for children. It's like, I've said this before, but bright colors and dumb characters. You have the two cute animal sidekicks in there for the kids, and they're great. So, like, you can make these things good. They don't have to be cynical. I hate the cynicism that leaks into children's entertainment.
But then again, it worked for DreamWorks for quite a long time and still works for them. So I can see why people think that way.
Yeah. It's Troll's fault.
Michael Eisner's original idea for the film was it being set in modern day San Francisco, with the heroine being transported to a fairy tale world. They couldn't make that work. According to director Grano, one of the most difficult problems during the development of the film's plot was how to get Rapunzel out of the tower without immediately ending the film. Because in the fairy tale, that's pretty much the end of the story.
Yeah. So they came up with the entire lantern stuff.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you think about it, her mother, if she just changed the date of Rapunzel's birthday, probably would have been fine. But the whole thing that she wants to escape to see the lanterns that happened to go up on her birthday, she's like, oh, you know, maybe there's something here. Whereas, like, if the lanterns were just, like, 4 months after her birthday, I think she'd probably be like, I'm okay living in this tower forever. So you screwed up there, mother. You should have changed the date of her birthday. She doesn't know any better. She doesn't know when she's born.
That's a flaw in her plan. I really like the setup of the story, touching on that there. It's a standard fairy tale fare, but it creates an interesting dynamic with Gothel posing as Rapunzel's mother.
Yeah, and I think Gothel is a good villain. Like, really her entire superpower is gaslighting.
Yeah, she's a conceited, self-absorbed jerk. She's basically negging Rapunzel into staying in the tower.
Yeah, her superpower is gaslighting. It's like, oh, Rapunzel, how dare you? I'm so nice to you. Why would you want to go here? They'll hate you. You're not ready for the real world, Rapunzel. He loves you, Rapunzel? Really?
But she's just nice enough to her to get her to keep on renewing her.
That's what gaslighting is. Yeah. It's just like, just the right amount of sugar while you're throwing salt in her eyes.
Again, something that really resonates in 2021.
Gaslighting? You're gaslit by people a lot, Ken?
Yeah, well...
Me, mostly on gas.
Well, bad faith gaslighting here is basically what politics is these days.
It's what all culture is these days. We can't avoid the bad faith gaslighting.
One note I have here, Gar. How did Gothel discover that she had to sing the song to activate the flower? The flower, I think, was just messing with her. It's like,
yeah.
Sing the stupid song, or else you're not getting my magic.
Do it. Do it.
Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi are great in this film. Mandy's voice was made for a Disney princess song, but I think the dynamic of it, the natural feeling of their performance, really added to the success of this film.
Strong voice cast as a whole. Who played the mother?
I can't remember her name, but she's a famous Broadway actress.
That's Donna Murphy, according to Wikipedia. I kind of like, and a similar thing, we didn't mention it last week because it doesn't have, like, you know, the big star names, Mandy Moore, you know, well, Mandy Moore and Zach Levi are the biggest stars in the world. But, you know, if you go back, we didn't mention the cast much last week because the cast were, you know, mostly going back to similar to, like, Beauty and the Beast, a bunch of, like, Broadway unknowns to the broader masses. And these films are probably better off with Broadway unknowns. Well, they're not, as I said, they're not unknowns on Broadway. They're probably big Broadway stars. But I'm not a theater nerd, even though I'd probably love theater if I became a theater nerd. but you don't get those. Like, but those kind of performances really punctuate these films because these films are basically Broadway musicals animated, and that's the reason they're good.
And when you stunt cast, for want of a better term,
yeah,
you get scenarios like, don't at me, Beyonce in the Lion King remake.
Ooh.
Where it just feels like she's reading lines instead of performing. So I'm just hearing Beyonce as a lion instead of hearing Nala.
But like sometimes when you stunt cast and you do John Travolta as the dog,
it works.
It works out pretty well. So,
and you know, we've seen in the past, you know, Demi Moore did an admirable job in Hunchback, and you know, so it can work. And the most famous example, of course, is Tom Hanks as Woody.
Mm.
So I'm not against it, but I think you've got to get an actor that doesn't just do it like, oh, that's an easy payday, I'll show up in my sweats and do the gig. You've got to get an actor that's like, I'm interested in this, I'm invested, I'm going to give a performance.
Yeah, and Tom Hanks is like basically the best actor of all time, so.
Oh my god. He wrote a book about typewriters. Now, some of the stories are boring, but he did an audio version.
Ah, there you go.
Oh my god. It's
like, I will happily listen to your boring audio story when you're speaking it, Tom Hanks, because I just want to listen to your voice.
And lull me to sleep. Not too much here on the story here, guys. Some funny notes I had stuff I liked. The face that Flynn makes when Rapunzel knocks him out with the frying pan is hilarious, and his unconscious body is very well animated. You noted that as well.
Yeah, he's like slumped and lying there, and his feet are like facing in opposite directions. And yeah, that's a very good, like, that's just good animation. That's a gag that is entirely just really good animation. So good job, Disney.
Yeah, and the whole thing of her trying to get him into the wardrobe and him falling out of the wardrobe, all that is really well done.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure he should be brain dead by the time she's done, because not only does she hit him with a frying pan a few times, he falls like head first out of that wardrobe at one stage.
Yeah, and that's a cast iron frying pan. That's gonna bludgeon you to death if you hit someone with it enough times. Rapunzel going back and forth over her decision to leave the tower is also very funny. She goes between like, I'm so excited, this is amazing, to I'm the worst daughter ever.
Which goes back to the fact that the very effective gaslighting, that's like, she's free, but she's like, no, guilt.
Yeah. Also, Gothel, her plan is pretty solid, to be fair, you know.
My favorite thing about this film is Gothel's plan, because, like, there's always third act conflict in these films, the third act drama that they have to overcome, and usually it's, like, not usually, but a lot of the time, it's really contrived, and it really doesn't work, and it's really just, like, we had to put a stumbling block in this film for them to overcome at the last minute, sorry, that's the way this works, and it's not, like, organically weaved into the film. Whereas, like, Gothel's plan is, like, so well implemented that I'm like, yeah, I'm on board with it. It just feels organic.
She could have just brute forced it, but she set things up, put all the pieces in play, so it makes it look like he abandoned her and she came to save her. And again, gaslighting at its finest.
And she laid the seeds for it earlier, and then she set up the pieces, and then she moved the pieces perfectly into position for her to save the day and for him to be tied to a boat as he floats off into the water.
She also took the risk of leaving her with Flynn when she could have just dragged her away, of course. Yeah. So, like, she really knew what she was doing. And it all made sense where, you know, as you said, these third act conflicts often, they kind of have a swerve. Like, there was a bit of a fourth conflict, for example, in Bolt as well. I know that, like, there was two minutes ago they were best friends. It didn't make any sense.
And there's that little house thing, and they have conflict, and like that's all swiftly overcome. You know, she gets a big speech from the annoying hamster, and then she kills him off. Freaking Rhino, I hate you. But yeah, it's really well constructed. I think this is a tightly constructed, plotted film, as opposed to like Princess of the Frog, which did have that meandering through the woods effect. They didn't meander through the woods in this film. They went through the woods quite swiftly. Then they got to the city. They did a nice dance, they fell in love, they were driven apart and came back together. There you go, swiftly done, in and out.
The only bit I bumped on here, Gar, was the part where the penny drops and Rapunzel figures out who she is a bit far-fetched for me.
Yeah, and well, like, to be fair, when she's looking at that baby in the mural in the city, she kind of worked it out there, right? Yeah,
but like, there's all this flashback and she saw memories of her in a crib as a child, and like, no.
She's a magic baby, Ken.
She is a magic sun baby, in fairness.
Ken is like this woman whose hair heals people is fine, but oh, the fact that she'd remember some baby memories is too unrealistic for me in this Disney film.
Yeah, we've also got a classic Disney villain plunged to their doom.
Well, I think more importantly, the moment before that, when Flynn gets into the tower and she just stabs him.
Yeah.
She's like, no messing around, no villain monologue. She just stabs him. And yeah. It's like, yeah, stabby, stabby.
Because that's normally their undoing, that they do the old villain exposition, but she's like, nah, let's finish this.
He just stabs him. That's so good.
The only thing is that it sets up this contrived ending where she doesn't have her magic hair anymore. So we've got a good old-fashioned magic tear in place of the decommissioned hair.
One can only assume inspired by the Pokemon movie.
Yeah.
Pikachu cries Ash back to life after he gets turned into stone.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, like, you know, obviously it's a bit of a trope, as you've just mentioned there. Do you think it's just, like, the one last Hail Mary throw and she's not magic anymore? Or do you think that her tears are magic, which means that her hair was not so important all along?
Well, like, realistically, why would her hair be magic? You know, she was, her mother got a magic flower put into her to keep her alive while she was pregnant, which turned her baby magic. So, like, babies don't have hair when they're in the womb, I don't think.
Well, they can be born with hair. Like, some babies are born with quite a lot of hair.
Yeah, and we don't know how far along the mother is. So this is a difficult question to know whether or not the hair became magic while in the womb. I think we're getting too deep into this Disney film.
There is a prequel film, but I need to see more detail on the lore of this film.
Yes, how far into the pregnancy was she? Did she have the magic hair while in the womb? Did the magic flower go to the hair and make it magic? Or did it just go and make Rapunzel magic? Who knows? These are the questions that this film left unanswered, and they're really deeply unsatisfying films as a result, Ken. These are the questions.
Release the Snyder Cut.
Yeah. The haircut.
Good. Very well done, Gary. You're not sleep deprived at all today.
No.
And unlike last week.
Even though I've literally only been awake for like half an hour. WrestleMania.
Fair play, Gar. Alan Menken is back in the hot seat for this one, Gar. He scored the film and wrote all the songs with lyrics by Glenn Slater. Menken said he wanted to blend medieval music with 60s folk rock. I didn't really notice that, but I don't
know. No, it's a Broadway musical. What's he talking about?
Yeah.
Even the song in the freaking pub is like just full on like a Broadway first act musical song where everyone's like, I'm gonna sing a happy jaunty song, and that's it. Whatever he's doing, he's not you mentioned the plunge to the doom and I cut you off, but yes, we're back to the Disney classic. Villain falls to her death but then crumbles into dust because she's aging dramatically.
Yeah, so she doesn't even hit the ground, which is quite a dramatic visual, because she doesn't hit the ground, the cape just fluttered to the ground and we see dust come out of it.
Yeah, literally ages, like thousands of years, because we actually don't know how old Gothel is, do we? We just know she's very old.
She should at least be dead, so it makes sense. You know, you noted, Garrett, the song in the pub, which is called I've Got a Dream. It's a great little aside song, similar to Gaston in Beauty and the Beast. It's not one of the ones you'll play again and again, but it's fun.
Yeah, and like Mother Knows Best is like the most Broadway song that's been in one of these films since I think Belle at the start of Beauty and the Beast.
I wrote this down here. It has a very Stephen Sondheim sound to it.
I'll take your word for it.
Have you watched the film Into the Woods?
Yes, but I don't remember it and I didn't care.
Okay, you won't remember the songs, but it does have a very Sondheim-esque sound to it, which would make sense because, you know, Alan Menken might not have been a protege of him, but he would have been inspired by him because he's still alive, actually. He's 90.
Into the Woods is a grim fairy tale film as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an amalgamation of all of them.
So there you go. That's like, there's that DNA there. But yeah, it's like, oh, this is a Broadway song. We're doing a Broadway song.
When Will My Life Begin is a very solid Disney Princess I Want song as well. Yep.
And like, it has all the like the classics. There's the I Want song. There's the Villain song. There's the like happy-go-lucky group of people together song. There's the Fall in Love song. There you go. That's the songs in this film. They all fill the Disney tropes, but they're all really good, so who cares?
I'm torn though, because I See the Light, as you said, is a classic falling in love song. Possibly the best song in the movie for me, but I do also like When Will My Life Begin.
I prefer When Will My Life Begin. I like that kind of upbeat, catchy song.
That's the one you're going to be singing in when you're going about your business.
Yeah.
Gareth, the legacy of this film, Tangled spawned a very lucrative franchise for Disney, both in terms of TV adaptations, prequel films, theme park attractions, and merchandise.
Kingdom Hearts levels.
You still see Rapunzel dolls to this day.
Yeah, the problem with Kingdom Hearts level is when you look at this film is mostly just woods in a city.
Yeah.
And even like the everything in this film is very well animated, but it's very like of this era of 3D animation, where still like the backgrounds are pretty empty and like everything they focus on looks nice, but there's actually nothing going on behind it. So like the Kingdom Hearts level does replicate that and then adds nothing. So it's like it ends up just feeling like an empty space, because like there's the giant area with the tower, which is just like an empty gorge with a tower in it. Then there's the woods, which are just woods, you know, trees. Trees and rocks.
They know how to do trees, Gareth. They're very good at trees.
And then you do get to the city and it looks quite nice, but there's not like a ton going on in the city. So the Kingdom Hearts, I don't like the Tangled Kingdom Hearts level. There's not enough going on in it.
The wider shots of the city are nice, but as you said, they don't really, like, you tend to have that kind of blurry background when they're up close with the characters.
Yeah.
And you understand it, you know, you want to get these films out on schedule.
This film already cost $260 million. Yeah. Imagine if they were like, all right, we're going to do fully detailed backgrounds. It's like, it'll cost $400 million and not be released for another 4 years.
And we won't make any money.
Yeah, so I get it, but it doesn't make for a great Kingdom Hearts level, Ken. That's the problem. That's the legacy of this film. A mediocre Kingdom Hearts level.
Podcast over.
Yeah.
The film was nominated for Best Original Song at the 83rd Academy Awards for I See the Light, but lost out to We Belong Together from Toy Story 3. I don't understand this one, Gar. It's a nice song, but not one of Randy Newman's best.
No, and like, when you look at Toy Story songs and the pantheon of Toy Story songs, You've Got a Friend in Me, all-time classic, probably Randy Newman's best song.
Yeah.
Then you move to Toy Story 2, When Somebody Loved Me, which is even better. It's the best, like, character song in maybe an animated film ever.
And the best sequence.
Yes, in terms of, like, that tells you so much about who she is. And it does it in song, and the song makes you cry every time because it's Sarah McLachlan, and that's I think her job in the world, to make everybody cry every time she sings.
Imagine being that, like, that's your reputation, like people not coming to a concert to bop along, they're coming to have a cry,
a bit of a weep, you know. Sarah McLachlan's in town, I feel a little emotional, let's get some weeping out. And then you get to We Belong Together in Toy Story 3, which
it's a nice song,
and it's good in a great film, but it's
I See the Light is a good song.
Yeah, it's a better song.
It deserved to win it. Interestingly though, Gareth, this film was also not nominated for Best Animated Feature Film.
Why not?
There's only space for three at the time, and it didn't make the cut.
Look, Toy Story was winning, so who cares?
Yeah, fair. Toy Story 3 is close to a perfect film.
Yeah, because like, while We Belong Together does not deserve Best Song, Toy Story 3 certainly deserves Best Picture that year, or Best Animated Feature. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, only the third film to be nominated.
Which we'll talk about all this again when we eventually move into Pixar and talk about...
What, Gareth? We're only doing the Disney films. This podcast is ending in a few weeks.
Yeah, do you think Randy Newman's did he get nominated for anything from Princess and the Frog?
Yes.
Did he win?
No.
Well, there you go. He's like, suck it, Disney, I've won in the end.
He got nominated for two songs, actually, Down in New Orleans and Almost There. Didn't win either of them.
Almost There. See, that's in my head. I said last week that they didn't have any great songs. I've upgraded Almost There to a great song. Well done, Princess the Frog. I issue a retraction.
An abridged adaptation of Tangled, the musical, premiered on board Disney Magic, the Disney Cruise Line, in November 2015, featuring three new songs written by Menken and Slater. I think that's a real shame. I'd like to see this make its way to Broadway, because it might not be top of my list to see as a musical, but I would go see it.
Yeah, I'd go see all of these Disney films. Like, all of the Broadway style Disney films, and even like the non-Broadway style, like Tarzan, which is just a bunch of Phil Collins pop hits. I'd go see all of them. I'd go see a Brother Bear film. So like,
and you've done the puppets in The Lion King. It'll be easy to do it.
Yeah, so I'd go see all of these films on Broadway. And in fact, I've only seen The Lion King on Broadway, so I'm a hypocrite. But how many of these films have Frozen got an actual Broadway one?
Mm-hmm. Tarzan didn't last too long though.
Yeah, is Frozen still going?
Well,
obviously not at the moment.
It's up for debate whether it's going to come back or not.
Yeah, they should just do a Disneyland place where they just do the... Actually, they do basically do all these films as
Yeah, I saw a version of Aladdin in one of the theme parks. It lasts for about 40 minutes.
Was it good?
It was quite good. You get the songs, and there's a bit of acting, but it's really just to get to the songs. And after they developed the actual Broadway musical, which I saw on the West End.
Did they have the same problem where it's like, you're not Robin Williams?
Yeah.
Never. That's the problem with Aladdin. Aladdin is, we talked about this in the podcast, but you can't adapt Aladdin because it's just Robin Williams.
And the issue is, at least in our culture, we have the pantomime at Christmas time. Mm. Aladdin is often one of those. So it felt a bit pantomime-y to me.
Yeah. And like, panto was a fine way to do Aladdin because it's like, it's a totally different genre of entertainment, basically. So you could do the genie character as something that's not Robin Williams, and it doesn't feel like you're just thinking the entire time, it's like, I wish I was just watching Robin Williams, which again was, we mentioned this before when reviewing Aladdin, but that's the problem with the Aladdin live action film. I'm surprised they haven't made a Tangled live action film. They probably will.
Funny you say that, Gar, a live action Rapunzel movie is in the works at Disney, but it's unclear whether it will follow the plot of Tangled.
They probably will, because they're lazy.
It should. And it's easy.
Though they didn't put Make a Man Out of You into Mulan, so I'll never watch that movie.
Boo. You had notes of it in the score, but that was it. They came up with a new song at the end by Christina Aguilera.
Of course they did.
Called Loyal, Brave and True.
But was it as good?
It's a good song. I've been listening to it,
damn it,
for the last few months. So, Gar, that's Tangled. I think it goes without saying that this is Disney back to the height of their powers. Mm-hmm. And the decade that would follow it was hit after hit. I don't think they've had a flop since.
Well, Pooh wasn't a big hit, was it?
It made its money.
There you go. But it wasn't like a cultural sensation in the same way that like Frozen was. What's after Pooh? Is it Frozen?
Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, Wreck-It Ralph and then Frozen.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's until Frozen that you can be like, this is Disney like truly back to the level they were in the early to mid-90s. Not even like on a quality level, because I think Tangled is back to where it was on a quality level. I just mean like on a cultural level where it's like...
making $1 billion.
Yeah, where those films are just like cultural, pervasive, unavoidable hits. Like Let It Go is the most infuriating song to every parent from the year 2012 or 2013 or whatever it came out, because it was played to death and their children annoyed them and they had to watch Frozen a million times. And I don't think any of these films have been that film for like the entire of the last 20 years between Tarzan and Frozen. So we're not quite there to like full Disney peak of their powers owning the world yet, but we're getting there, aren't we? And like, this is just a darn good film. It looks nice, it's funny, it's great songs, it has a romance that works, and the two characters have chemistry, which I didn't think they did in Princess and the Frog. I didn't think those two had chemistry at all, and it just works. It all works. It's all very enjoyable.
And all those things coalesce at the end to a satisfying ending, and you walk away with that feeling of warmth, and that's, it's hard to describe, but when you walk away from a Disney film with that feeling of completion, that's probably not a great word to use, but...
Ken feels a feeling of completion. There was no fish in this film, though, so you didn't feel that entire feeling of
completion. No sexy fish, unfortunately.
That's an old school, but we haven't done a sexy fish gag in a while. There hasn't been sexy fish in any of these films in a while either, though. Yeah, so
maybe it's too hard to animate in 3D.
Yeah.
But I just came away from this film with a feeling that I had for a lot of the hits of the Renaissance. So I do think that they are starting to get back to their best. And it's interesting that when you have these down periods, you can always see, like, as you said, the breadcrumbs leading up to the big comeback, which we could agree is Frozen.
Quality-wise, I think it's Tangled.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, this is as good as... like, this film is as good as Aladdin. This film is as good as Hercules. I don't think it's, like, the top tier, but that, like, B-plus tier that you got in the 90s, I think it's up there with Tarzan, with Hercules, with Aladdin. It's not like Beauty and the Beast and Lion King good, but it's just that level below that good. Like, films can work on two different levels. They can work on an emotional level where, like, maybe there's some flaws here and there, or some bits and bobs that don't add up, or some stuff that feels contrived, but as a whole, it works on an emotional level. It makes you feel something, so that's all that really matters. Or it can work on a mechanical level where it's like all the moving parts connect in a way that's very satisfying, and they work, and they're like technically very good. And like this, and most of Disney films usually work on the emotional level more than the mechanical level, and this works very well on an emotional level. Like, all of those beats hit. When the villain is stabbed, it's hilarious. Maybe that's not the emotion they're going for, but I find stabbings very funny in animated children's films.
It just feels very stark or harsh, doesn't it?
She doesn't hesitate, she just stabs him. Yeah, great job.
Like, she's a very calculated villain.
Yeah.
And she gets her comeuppance in the end.
Yeah, this film works on an emotional level in a way that the best Disney films do.
All right, Disney writers. Sadly, we've come to the end of the show for another week. Resident musical expert Nicole is coming up in just a few moments with something special from the soundtrack of this week's movie. I could tell you what it is, but you'll have to wait to the end to find out.
I forgot to mention, imagine living at Rapunzel's hair.
Yeah.
That's so hard. It's so long.
My hair is getting quite long now because we're in another lockdown and I refuse to cut it myself. But my fringe is getting in my eyes and it's getting annoying, let alone the...
trailing 15 feet behind you.
Yeah.
Like, imagine, like, if you came into this room, which people can't see, but it's a relatively normal-sized bedroom, and, like, you walked in the door and you had to close the door, every single time, you'd have to spend, like, 2 minutes pulling your hair all the way in the door so you don't slam the door in your hair. Or it's like...
Imagine the bedhead as well.
You're getting on the bus, it's like, sorry, guys, I just have to pull my hair on the bus, sorry. And then you're sitting down and, like, the bus driver's like, actually, you have to pay for 2 seats because your hair takes up a seat. And every time you fly, same thing. It's like, imagine sitting next to the person Rapunzel's hair on a plane.
Yeah, I just need you to shut up. So I can do the outro. New episodes of Magic by Design land every Monday, where all magical podcasts are downloaded. Stop by our website at magicbydesign.buzzsprout.com to find a full list of podcast platforms. We are literally everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, you name it, we're on it. We're also on YouTube. Thank you to the nice person who gave us a lovely comment this week.
Oh, yeah, someone gave us a very nice comment on the Treasure Planet review, and it's like, look at people engaging with our podcast. It's so nice.
It does feel nice. Make sure to subscribe wherever your heart desires so you never miss an episode. Do you agree with our assessment of Tangled, or are you going to shank us with a knife?
Or your,
much like Gothel.
Are your opinions more tangled about... Tangled.
Good job, Gary.
You forgot to mention about the really good, like, the fact that the it's called Tangled because their hair, but it's also called Tangled because these characters get tangled together.
Their lives become intertwined with a common purpose.
Yes, which is the reason they named it Tangled instead of Rapunzel.
I forgot about that, but that is a very good note, Gary.
Get it in at the end, Ken.
Anyway, the gist of it is, if you agree or disagree with the review, make sure to join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/magicbydesignpod, on Twitter at magicdesignpod, or on Insta at magicbydesignpod. If you're a fan of the show and want to support what we're doing here, please do consider giving us a review on your podcast platform of choice. 5 stars, please. If you are so inclined, you can also share the podcast on your socials or recommend the show to a fellow Disney fan. If you give us a 5-star review, we will give you a satchel with a priceless crown in it.
Yeah.
We only have one, though. No, actually, we have loads of them. Give us all the 5-star reviews.
Where do you, can you steal a crown these days? Obviously, crown jewels. We can break into the Tower of London. Is that where they keep them? So we can steal those crown jewels and give people crowns?
Yeah.
Is there any Irish crowns? There probably is somewhere around. Probably made out of twigs, though, because we're poor.
Yeah.
You can be racist towards yourself, right?
Of course you can. That's just self-deprecation.
There you go.
We'll be back next week at the same time, same place, with Disney's 51st animated feature, Winnie the Pooh.
Pooh! We're on a Pooh episode! Pooh. I'm so happy.
But until then, stay safe, and remember, don't just sit there looking through a window waiting for your life to begin. Go out there and chase it.
Except not really right now, because, you know, global pandemic. But no. When, you know, vaccinations and everything's back to normal, then go out there and chase
2 weeks after your second dose, go and chase your dreams.
Yeah. That's the lesson of Tangled.
Now then, it's time again for our favourite part of every episode. Nicole just couldn't decide which song to pick from Tangled this week, so she's only gone and done another medley. Thanks for listening. Now, take us home, Nicole.
Hello there, Disney fans. It is I, your musical correspondent Nicole, coming to you live from my bedroom. This week, we're getting ourselves in a knot with Tangled. The score is composed by our main music man, Alan Menken, with the lyrics written by Glenn Slater, who we remember from The Little Mermaid. Menken is said to have tried to blend a medieval sound with 60s folk rock for the movie, channeling Joni Mitchell. This is evident from the beginning. The opening number, When Will My Life Begin, doesn't feature a grand orchestra, but instead a guitar set. The music has a singer-songwriter vibe. More Taylor Swift than Joni Mitchell, in my opinion. Apparently, the movie went through a few renditions, which meant Menken had to rework his music up to 5 times before they settled on a sound we hear and now associate with Tangled. This movie is also not the typical musical movie we're used to. It's not song-driven. The songs are not used to drive the storyline, but more to reveal personality traits of the characters. There are only 6 songs in total and a closing credits song. Compare that to The Princess and the Frog, which had 11 songs in total. That being said, the film is full of, you said it, bops. I See the Light was nominated for an Oscar, Golden Globe and Grammy, and won the Grammy for Best Original Song for Visual Media. This week, I couldn't pick between two of my favourite songs. So here's a mashup of When Will My Life Begin and I See the Light. I hope you enjoy it. Clean. Polish and wax, do the laundry and mop and shine up. watching from the windows all those years outside looking in. All that time, never even knowing just how blind.